and welcome to Track and Food Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Vaughn. It is now officially 2019, and I'm sitting with my co-host, just him today, by the way, Mickey McLeod. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm a little under the weather, but toughing it out, so I'm a gamer.
You're going to be a gamer
player.
Today? Okay.
Yeah.
It is Friday. We're recording today. The weather outside is, I don't know, kind of cloudy and murky.
Yeah, it's been cold in Vancouver.
It's a bit cold.
Yeah, but not like... As compared to the last 2 years, not that cold.
No, it's not that cold.
Pretty lucky.
Well, compared to what the rest of Canada is getting right now, it sounds like we're doing pretty good. But we're very excited. We're officially in a new year. It's 2019. We took the first couple weeks off of early January, just kind of reset, enjoy the break. We're back. We're very excited to launch Track and Food into the new year, talk about some really great, meet with some really great guests, have some really good topics on, explore the food and culture sphere in Vancouver, but also in Canada and globally. You know, all the things out there that we're really interested in talking about. We've got a lot of great stuff to talk about today.
We figured mostly Vancouver.
Mostly Vancouver.
Today's
podcast is going to be mostly a BC-centric one because there's a lot of stuff happening in the province right now that is really interesting. And we wanted to just sit down together, face-to-face, just have a nice little discussion. Since Mickey's a little bit sick, I'm probably going to be doing a lot more of the guiding of this episode. But we're very thrilled to be back. Thank you for joining us. And if you are joining us for the first time, we've been doing this since last February. So we've got 20 episodes in the can. Do check out some of our past episodes. We want to thank all of the guests we had on last year. And this should be a really fun time this year.
I'm fine. I'm good. Like I'm good to go. I'm like Michael Jordan in the 1998 finals.
You mean the 97 flu game? Is that
97
where you are?
97 flu game. That's me. Yeah.
You're going to carry us with 38 points?
I was a real basketball player playing through the goddamn flu.
Do you remember the end of that game when he like... I think what it was, he stole the ball.
Yeah, he stole the ball.
Hit the three.
Yeah.
And then he rolled back and he rolled his hands like kind of like he was rolling bread.
Yeah.
And then he looked like he was basically getting a pass out, then Pippen and basically had to carry him to the bench.
Iconic, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Pippen was such a good sidekick.
What have you thought about this, by the way? It's an early tangent, but LeBron James.
Is it a basketball tangent?
It's a basketball one. But LeBron James just recently talking about the fact that he thinks after he won game seven of the finals in 2016.
Yeah.
Saying that he's the greatest player of all time.
Yeah. I don't know why he... To me, that just seems like his career and his persona in the media has been so carefully calculated. So to go on a show and say that, for people listening who aren't familiar with basketball at all, our apologies, but also with this incident that we're talking about, LeBron James was on a NBA recap show where a bunch of NBA superstars talk about the finals and basically their thoughts on it and how they feel the series went. And in the middle of the show, I watched the whole thing. They're asking LeBron, baiting him into the question. He wasn't even baited into the question.
He just answered it.
Basically, he just comes out saying that he feels that after his performance of bringing a championship to Cleveland, he feels that that made him the greatest player of all time, which is like, that's so ballsy to say. But for someone who has been so carefully calculated in terms of everything he says to the media, like post-game, pre-game, all his social media stuff, his IG, everything is very like media friendly, and like for him to go out and say that was like to me very shocking.
Well, it's kind of funny.
It's obviously not true.
Michael Jordan was interviewed a couple of years ago about something like this when he was asked by Ahmad Rashad saying that like, do you think you're the greatest player of all time? And he's like, no, that I think that's disrespectful to all the players that came before me because I never competed against them.
Absolutely.
And I've always felt like when you do like a ranking of the greatest players, whether it's in any sport, but especially in basketball, you kind of have to just go by like their era. Like LeBron dominated this era. Kobe was the last one. Jordan was before that. Magic and Bird. So it's kind of like, you know, unless they really competed against each other, especially in their primes, it's kind of hard for you to, you know, game is
exactly.
So different now.
So different now.
Like in Jordan's era, they didn't shoot threes. Now it's three fucking, you know, James Harden's fucking shooting 33s a game.
Yeah. So, I mean, we all know LeBron's arrogant and full of himself. This just proves it. Not that he's not, you know, maybe the second greatest player of all time. Maybe
no,
third.
I'd say he's in the top five.
He's in the top five.
He's in the top five. He's got to win at least one more title.
But it doesn't. Yeah, but even if that happens, it's still not going to put him into the territory. Jordan is pretty much untouchable in terms of his success as a champion, as a winner.
But Jordan doesn't even have the best success in NBA history, and this is where the flawed system.
No, but he doesn't.
Bill
the
Russell.
Finals.
Bill Russell, 13 finals.
Right. Sure. But I mean, that's in the 60s, right?
But see, you can't discount that. That's unfair.
You can't discount it exactly. Yeah. But. You said errors, but also you know, the numbers for Jordan will probably be surpassed by LeBron.
Yeah,
that might help his favor. But it's just the finals record is going to be the huge one.
So is this our basketball podcast now?
Is this a
food podcast?
So if you've switched channels or if you've turned our podcast off.
A nice way to start the podcast this year.
Let's talk about some food stuff.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that are going on in the market in Vancouver going on. Well, there's a big thing that dropped yesterday that I was really kind of excited. Well, not excited to hear about, but actually excited is a really good word actually to use it because the...
I know that there was a lot of excitement on the internet.
Yeah, so Global News dropped this kind of thing yesterday. Richard Sussman dropped this column saying that the BC's antiquated liquor laws come under fire by Canada's Commissioner of Competition. Now, this basically just talks about the idea of something that if you've lived in BC for any amount of time, you know that getting alcohol in this province, whether you work in the hospitality trade or even probably not as much in the if you're a retailer, but it's we have one of the most expensive systems in anywhere in the world, and we have one of the most like poorly run systems in the world. And so basically what they're talking about, when they're talking about this competition bureau, I've actually been working on a column, ironically, and this is the reason why I'm very excited to talk about it today, because I've been working on something about this for the last couple months. And I was going to do a big column about it, but instead, now with this coming out, I feel like it's probably better to just maybe do it in podcast form. But it was interesting.
Guess what? We have a podcast.
Yes, we have a podcast. It's very nice. You get to hear my words about all this. But it's interesting when they're talking about this. So for a lot of people out there who don't understand the system or how it works, if you work in the hospitality trade, whether it's here or versus comparative to our neighbors in Alberta or even south in the United States, the way it's done here is so flawed and expensive that it has become a bogged down system where if you are trying to get good product and you're an importer, it really, really, you're really hampered by a lot of bureaucracy and just red tape and stuff like that just does not need to be there. And what this filing was, when they put this on Global News, put this up, they basically had an interview and they talked with David Eby, who's the Attorney General of BC. And he's the one who oversees the entire process. Problem is right now his mindset is all cannabis because of the legal, because now the cannabis umbrella comes under his purview.
Yeah.
And they're going to be mixed together. And that has dominated kind of the whole, everything that they're doing right now, for probably since last year and probably going up until the end of this year, because they're going to try to get everything licensing for everyone in the province. But if you're someone who's worked in a hotel or restaurant or you're an importer, the frustrations that you've been dealing with in reading about what they're detailing here in this report is very exciting, because what it does is, and they're talking about the Competition Bureau, and that is really coming from, a lot of it's coming from Australia and California, because in the United States there's a lot of companies that want to compete and a lot of brands that want to compete in BC, and there's a lot of it's BC's made it kind of unfair for them to have this. I don't know, I sent you some documents about this last night, and I know I got you to read some of this, but the government itself has kind of done they've done a little bit of their own internal policy recently, and they had this really good report that came out by a lawyer that was hired by the government. His name is Mark Hicken, and he actually recommended, I think it was 20 recommendations for the government to kind of look at maybe changing the way the way the system is run right now and how to make things more efficient. And I actually spoke with someone high up in kind of this field back in October and talked to him. And I'm not going to name names because he wanted to be more off record. But he and I sat down for an hour and we talked in length about how the system is run, how things come from Richmond and Container World, when things, like this summer, there was a real big mess of systems because of all the stuff that's in Delta, which is going to be the new distribution branch. But if you think about all this, and you're running a restaurant, I mean, hearing this, you're elated because our system is so based on a lot of stuff that was around from Prohibition, that it's very exciting news. Hopefully things can stir.
Really old laws, yeah. And just for reference, what Jamie's specifically referring to is April 30th last year, 2018, the Business Technical Advisory Panel, basically highlighting a few key points on the significant economic activity the liquor and hospitality industries generate, so the money that comes in and everyone who's involved with that in terms of the unions and people's livelihoods, public's views on the correct balance of liquor regulation, which has a wide variance, significant government revenue generated because it is a monopoly organization that basically generates revenue from all the transactions that happen.
I mean, but the essential thing to understand about the whole thing about the liquor distribution branch in BC is
there's one more
tax collector.
There's one more, and it's the negative social health and health consequences created by the immoderate liquor consumption. And that one's obviously complete bullshit, because you think the government really cares how much liquor they're stuffing into people? They're all making money.
I'm just going to tiptoe on something that's really going to be interesting in our future, but you want to know something that's really interesting is the cannabis market is about to take off in our province. But here's what's going to be interesting is cannabis is coming in. What's really interesting is once the edibles come in. Because right. Once you can get edibles and stuff like this into a lot of the non-alcoholic liquor products, what's going to happen is the liquor industry is going to could see a hit when people can start buying cocktails that have THC or cannabis products in them,
right?
But they don't have any alcohol.
Right.
So that's a market that's going to be growing, and the edibles market's going to be changing a lot of this stuff. And so that is actually kind of a byproduct of this. But what's interesting is that the way the government is rolling out the cannabis process is so much more streamlined than what they already have for the alcohol process right now that it's kind of frustrating if you work in this industry.
Yeah.
But what's interesting that comes from this Mark Kicken report, and I urge anyone out there to read it. You can find it online. It's pretty easy to find. We'll have a link for it once this podcast comes out.
Yeah.
But they kind of rounded up a lot of people that work in the industry, and they had this big panel advisory.
Yeah, they had winemakers, brewers, people that grow hops, people who run major private liquor stores, and also government-run ones as well.
Yeah, and so what they did is they kind of went around and kind of tried to get an assessment of where the market stands right now, how things are working, and then where the inefficiencies are. And one of they come up with this really interesting quote, and I thought it was just super poignant about where the market stands right now. It says, "I can order fish from Japan on a Saturday and receive it on a Tuesday. I'm unable to get a case of wine delivered from Richmond to downtown Vancouver in 2 weeks."
Yeah.
And that kind of is like, if you've worked in the industry and you are someone who runs like Ron Oliver, who owns Mammy Taylor's, who's a friend of ours, or if you run and you want to order product, let's say you like one of the things that you want to order spec product, getting it to your market. And because a lot of restaurants here deal with a lot of spec product is almost impossible. And if you're an importer, it's like a nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
That
exact one problem or scenario that anyone who's worked in a restaurant or managed a restaurant is super familiar with. I mean, as far as I can tell, is based on a few really interesting factors, including back hoarding of stock, shipping laws, how everything has to be run through the LCB.
But do you know how it works? So when let's say you order something in this province, and you order it, and let's say you order a product from France.
Yeah.
You order that product from France. By the time the order place and it comes from France and gets over here to Richmond, it goes to Container World, and then when it comes through the ports. So it comes through the ports and then goes to Container World. Container World is where everything is kind of like dropped in.
Yeah.
And that's where all the liquor and all the stuff is dropped in. And then what it does is that, so generally what you would think is like, from where it is there, you would just move it into the market.
Right.
But what they do is they take everything there and then they send it to a separate sorting facility. It's the distribution facility. And that's the BC one. That's the liquor distribution branch.
Yeah.
They move it
there. Which is unionized.
Unionized. It used to be down by the port area, but they just moved it this past summer to Delta.
Yeah.
So it goes from there, then it goes all the way to Delta, and then it goes from Delta, they have to get sorted, and then they have to send it back into BC.
Yeah.
So essentially we have a middleman that it really is unnecessary.
Well, so when I was reading this, the thought occurred to me that, you know, where is the line between being a regulatory functionality? Like, are they just like, you know, rechecking the inventory? Like, are they making sure the distribution is properly executed? Or is it just the exact opposite of that? Is it just another way to spend time and money and resources that benefit, you know, other people making money and who are in the certain beneficiary situations, right? So, you know, like BC has this like, and it's a very Canadian approach if you think about it, slow paced moving legislation. Like, let's just, you know, it's like the Uber thing that's happening right now. Like, let's just count all the chickens and, you know, make sure everything is like, you know, right for the people. But on the other side of that is like just government red tape that goes nowhere, and it's just an excuse for them to keep the system the way it is, right?
Well, I mean, think about the system right now. Like, I think, what is it?
It doesn't
like,
work right
in
now.
Vancouver, I think just, I think what,
it works for certain people, right?
But marijuana,
if you are part of the government and you're part of the politicians making these policies and you're part of the union leaders, which I know, I actually don't know sitting at this time recording with you, whether I'm like pro-union or anti-union. I don't know where I land on that. I haven't thought of it that much, but the way the system is now benefits a certain select group of people, and I think that's what people are trying to change, and that's why this hearing, you know, there's some really good nuggets in there. But reading it, I can't decide whether it's just, you know, people being really dumb or people being really greedy, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Well, I mean, it's a bit of both. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the one thing that people all need to understand, I said this earlier, is that the fact that, like, the whole BCL is, it's meant to be a tax collector.
Right.
In the last fiscal year, in 2017, the after revenue, I think BC brought in sales of $3 billion in revenue. At the end of the day, after all the bills were paid, I think we brought in a net tax collector of $1 billion.
Right.
Well, in Alberta, they run a way more efficient system. They only brought in $2 billion, yet they brought in profits of $800,000.
Right.
So the margins there are so different, but they brought in almost $1 billion. They had $1 billion less in sales, but they're way more efficient. And what happens with BC is that we run a very inefficient system.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things like this. We need to have in the panel here, they talk about how we need to have more third party delivery systems and get rid of all this, like taking it from one warehouse and bringing it to another warehouse and then bringing it over here.
Oh, you mean streamline?
Yeah. Like streamline things. So they do that already with certain things. So they talk about this where they talk about, like idea of spec products, but the way they label it's like products that are stocked and then products that are not stocked. I think that's how it was. Well, the government is also run in two ways. So when the liquor distribution branch was created around Prohibition, it was created as a single entity. It controlled everything. But as the prevailing governments over the last 70, 80 years have like taken power, they've slowly given away some of the power. And that's why you see a lot of private stores now. Well, within the province, there's up to, like, I think there's only 200 BC liquor stores in BC or BC government liquor stores, but there's up to 1500 different styles of wine, beer, other retailers where you can get liquor, and now grocery stores starting to get into that. And this is where Jim Pattison gets into this, because he actually owns a lot of grocery stores in this province. And one of the biggest worries that people want is like direct delivery, but then this can come into other factors with that. But when you have that much, now you have two different sorts of entities. You have like the kind of the private sector, which is starting to have more prominence. And then you have this government run sector. But then you have one CEO, Blaine Lawson, who runs the BCL. And this is one of the things that happened where people got frustrated back in April 2015 when they changed a lot of the taxation laws, is that the government stores are kind of they're competing with the private stores, but then they're the ones who create the distribution, and they're also the ones who set the market on the pricing. Because they're the ones who set the taxing. And the model before, I think it used to be 117% plus tax on whatever you paid. Now it's like 89%, but it's a variant tax, and it kind of frustrates a lot of people. Now, I'm probably going all over the place right now, and I'm probably losing you.
No, you're not losing me. I'm riveted.
But
but you're bringing up a good point, because how can you have, it's a conflict of interest. How can you have the regulatory body setting these restrictions and these marker numbers? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's one of the things that the Market Can Report talks about, is the fact that they feel like the CEO, the person who runs the BCL, Blaine Lawson, and I've heard some interesting stories about him, by the way.
Yeah, do tell.
But
we'll do it off air.
Yeah, but
off mic.
No, but basically what it does is he has so much power that he can generally dictate the market, but he's dictating it, but he's also competing. So he's actually finding ways to basically make what the BCL does, the stuff that is good for the government, it's kind of at their own competitive advantage.
Yeah.
And like, it's interesting when you look into all this stuff and like how big this market is. So there's a couple numbers.
You're talking about so much money.
Well, and there's a couple of markers that I thought were really interesting. So in this report, they talk about, so BC's restaurant industry generates $13 million in annual sales, constituting 5% of the province's GDP and employs over 174,000 people, which when you think about that, it absolutely makes sense. I mean, BC is basically a market based on a few things, but hospitality is a huge marker for that. Tourism industry contributes about $8 billion in GDP, more than any other resource other than oil and gas. The BC wine industry produces $2.8 billion in annual economic impact. And then the BCLDB, as I said earlier, contributes over $1 billion annually to the provincial government, the majority of which comes from its wholesale operations. Now, a lot of that's going to be changing with the cannabis coming into effect, which is going to be a really big thing. And then, in effect, BC now has three distribution systems for liquor. One for those local producers who are allowed to self-distribute their products, which should be the direct distribution. One for beer, brewer's distribution, and one for imported products, which is the LDB distribution system.
Yeah.
But because you and I have dealt with this before, we've worked in the hospitality field. And I mean, one of the biggest frustrations is the fact that, like, if you want, if I'm going to go on spec per se, like, if you want to order spec product,
you want to separate, this, you have you to separate yourself from any sort of any from your competitors.
Yeah.
And you want to have interesting, unique products that maybe certain places don't have. Yeah. It's almost impossible.
Well, and spec products only account for up to 10% of the market of what is sold.
Right.
Problem is the spec products are starting to take off. They're starting to become more prominent because they're...
Yeah, because people's tastes are being elevated.
Exactly. And importers want to bring them in, which is really cool. Importers play a huge role in all this and they are so valuable. And I think people underestimate how important they are. And I've sat down with some people, Jeff Curry, a good friend of mine who runs a wine syndicate. I mean, the stuff they do is awesome. The stuff they bring in is fantastic. And I can't imagine some of the headaches they've had to deal with. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because all this stuff is tied together because like one of the things that the government does that handcuffs them is like, if you want to bring spec into the province, you have to order by the case.
Yeah.
So, but problem is when you order by the case, it takes up a lot of space. Well, container roll doesn't have that much space. So when you want to order something and you want to bring in, and you bring in all, let's say a lot of people are bringing a lot of these products. It can be really frustrating to find things and bring things in, and especially when you have to send it to one distribution channel and then send it to another, and then it has to get sent out, and then things get lost in between. So it's like if you're an importer and you see that your product is here, but then you actually don't know where the fuck it is.
Right.
It's like, how do I track it? How do I sell it to my customers? It's just the whole system is just it's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember times back when I was managing. Like 2004, 2005, where we had like, there was like three things you couldn't get. It was like Campari, something else, and something else. And you would go anywhere else but British Columbia. Guess what? Like, there's no problems with anything. I've always thought that working in the industry in various positions, there's just some like kind of fishiness going on. And, you know, I've always thought it was obviously being the conspiracy theorist that I am. I always thought it was just like a system set up so that, you know, they can just keep raking off money. But as I read more and learn more about it from you and other sources, I don't think they're just a bunch of idiots.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine.
Maybe that's giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I mean,
probably a little from column A, a little from column B.
I mean, government can be a lot.
And column C and D.
I mean, like, I think Doug Ford already talked about this in Ontario, where he's thinking about privatizing the LCBO.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, I would say, like, if you were to ask me right now, in 15 years, is BC going to be run by the government? Like, is the BC liquor distribution branch going to be run by the government? I'd say no. I'd say they're at a point pretty soon where, or at least they're going to be, it's going to be marginalized, or it's going to be way different.
But is that going to drive prices higher then?
Not necessarily.
Will the competition drive it down?
Yeah, privatization generally drives competition down. But right. like what it really does is, like, the system doesn't need to be this difficult. There's just certain things that just make it more difficult. Like the whole, like the warehouse that they have in Delta, which they just built, and they had a lot of problems with that this past summer. Because one of the big issues they had this summer is they had the old container, and then the new one in Delta. And the problem was is that they were ordering product for both, but then the one in Delta got delayed. So what happens is they had to put everything in the other one, but then everything got, they just had way too much product there. So it just backlogged everything.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the people, and you were talking about union workers, a lot of the union workers who work for this stuff did not want to go work in Delta.
Yeah.
Because it was having to change their lifestyles, and that's understandable.
And, absolutely.
But it just, a lot of the stuff you can, I think you can streamline things. I think like we already have some great delivery services and, that could make things a lot more efficient and probably would give people a lot more understanding. But I mean, if you're the average consumer, you probably don't understand. You don't understand a lot of the stuff. You probably don't realize a lot of the stuff. A lot of the stuff is dealt with more in hospitality, but I mean, you see it, right? Because if restaurants and bars and hotels and stuff like this can't get their product, it's felt. The lack of quality that you can get in, there's also a big demand to push for Pro BC, which is, I'm not necessarily against, but it does stifle competition.
We're so oversaturated with BC products.
I mean, that's right now. I think that's the only thing you can sell right now in grocery stores is BC made. I think is one of the things.
So weird.
Yeah,
I know.
It's
but
weird.
What do you think about that though? Like, because on one hand, it's promoting your local products and your local, you know, your growers, people who make, you know, grow hops, grow wine grapes, all that stuff. But like, at a point, like, are these laws in place to grow BC and our import exports, or why are they in place? To me, it doesn't make sense as a consumer and not being able to go to the store and buy and be able to find Montenegro and only be able to find, you know, local BC products.
Yeah.
I can understand like wanting to your products to be exported to local provinces and also to the States to promote the stuff that you make in BC, but just to only have it available to us just seems like counterintuitive to me.
Well, and what's even worse is like, you know, what's even worse is if you know that the product is there, but you just can't get it.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest frustration is the fact that you go and look online and be like, you know, you order something and then your order comes and then it says you didn't get it because you just can't get it, but then you know it's there. They just haven't been able to get it from the warehouse to you. And they getting it from the warehouse to you is going to take a 2-week process or longer.
Yeah.
Like Ron and I ordered some wine this summer and it took us 3 months to get it.
Right.
And it wasn't because the wine wasn't there. They just weren't able to get it from the warehouse to another warehouse to a delivery to the whatever store it ended up going to eventually to us.
But it's so,
there's so many steps.
It's so mind numbing on what exactly, like, it's obviously not just one problem. It's a series of problems happening in that certain situation. So what is it? Like, is it competence? Is it greed? Like,
I think
how can we get to the bottom of this?
I think it's just organization.
Organization.
Yeah, I think it's probably the biggest one. I think they just organization and probably a little bit of too much consolidation of power, I'd say, for sure. Oversight is probably another one you could probably look into. And also, I mean, the government also looks at it. I've heard through some things that...
Yeah, we're going to get in trouble doing this podcast.
I haven't named any names. But I've heard through some various sources that the government still kind of is pissed off that there is a private market.
Right.
They look at that as
but didn't they create that private market?
Kind of, but they also look at that as like money lost because that's money that they could just be generating themselves.
Right.
And I mean, the previous Liberal government that put in the new taxing reform in April 2015, which changed a lot of things and made things a little bit more in favor of the BC liquor stores and the BC government, kind of fucked over a little bit of the private market. So, I mean, there is that as well. So, I don't know. I mean,
we got to be careful because we need to pay for all the bike lanes and bridges and stuff.
I mean,
and infrastructure.
At the end of the day, that's what people have to understand. It's like if the government, like the government right now is trying to push a lot of the stuff that it pushes, and they're also pushing a lot of their own product too. Like there's doing a lot of like government, right. Like the
so they want to keep our local economy strong in terms of products.
Kind of
the more Mission Hill wine that's selling in BC,
yeah.
You know, the money funnels back around to our local economy, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Whereas if everyone's just buying, you know, French wine, that's a different story.
Yeah, like I mean, there was a really cool paragraph that I read here when I was reading it. It says, so the government is stocking more of their own products, higher markups, more revenue, more taxes. This has caused importers to want to carry and order more specs, which has doubled recently. But the shitty situation is that they can only order in case lots, which take up a lot of space, and they add plenty of more SKUs, which in turn slows down the system. So it's like, I think it's just inefficiency. Like you can't even buy wine. I don't even think you can buy wine online in this province still.
Really?
Which is still, and they, I think part of that they were worried about was like, how do you avoid having people, minors buying wine? But I mean, think about this one.
That's the regulatory.
Think about this one. This is, to me, is like the crux of the entire problem that we're dealing with right now. This summer, let's say you and I go to the beach and we sit there and we're watching the sunset and we light up a joint. We can smoke a joint.
That sounds romantic, man.
Yeah. But you can light up a joint, but you can't have a beer.
Right.
And you're in public. Think about how fucked up that
is. Yeah. Well, that goes back to what I was saying before on how, you know, is it a Canadian thing? Just how slow this legislation moves. Because we just recently, in the last 4 years, got event licensing for as long as it's a contained thing, like, you know, Kids Fest or something like that. You can have mobile alcohol consumed. We just had the sound laws change for amplified music after 11 o'clock.
Yeah, which is really great for Malcolm Bull.
Right, but this has been over the course of like the last 6 years, and you just keep hearing talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. But everything, you know, this is bureaucracy at its heart, I suppose, but everything just moves so slowly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Eventually we'll get there. We can, well, we can have visible alcohol out of the beach, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The beach would be designated as, but it takes legislation to designate a certain beach as like, you know, here's our nude beach, wreck beach. Here's our beach where you can drink, Kits Beach. Well, hopefully Spanish Banks, actually.
Yeah, Spanish Banks.
Yeah. What would be the better, if they were going to legislate or designate a beach to drink at, what do you think the best one
would be?
Hold
on, what's your favorite beach in BC?
Oh,
or in Vancouver?
Spanish Banks, for sure.
That's your favorite?
Absolutely.
Over Third Beach?
Third Beach is good, but it's too downtown.
But I love it. That's so chill there.
Well, Spanish Banks is so...
Spanish Banks.
Both are secluded.
Spanish Banks
is way bigger.
I love Spanish Banks.
You have volleyball. You just have, it's a beautiful mountain backdrop. Well,
you got a great view too, right?
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love
more families, I guess, would be the downside.
Wreck Peach has just too much old penis for me.
What? Yeah. Not into old penis.
Yeah. No.
Weird.
The last time I was there, I was like having a good time, and then there's this old dude who was just standing as the sun was going down. He was just posing.
It's the whole community.
He would stand and he would turn and he would pose, and I was just like, no, I just don't.
Well, even Wreck Beach is widely considered to be the beach that you can't drink at, but still when the cops come down, you have to keep
But think about that now. The cops will come down, they'll see you smoking a joint or something like this, and they won't do anything. But then if you see you holding a beer, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, which is it? Like, it just, I don't understand that. That makes no sense to me.
It doesn't.
No.
That's boggling my mind right now. Yeah, so I'm trying to think about
it. I can't
it.
Drink a beer while I'm out the beach, but then I'm going to get high and then I'm going to get in my car.
Right.
Because that's safe.
Well, we've talked about it before. This is becoming the wild, wild west of the lawmakers trying to catch up with what's happening, with what's being allowed to be legal.
Yeah. I don't know.
Not to mention the law enforcement having like to be even farther behind on what the lawmakers are doing.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It was. I was.
Let's just let everybody do everything. Let's go back to like the Roman days.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. This. I will say one thing. Like walking into 2019 right now, just the world is very ominous right now. It's
right.
There's a lot of things. You saw? Do you see that stuff that came out? Was it BuzzFeed today about Donald Trump?
No. Dude, I follow U.S. politics since one of my previous girlfriends, Maggie. Shout out to if you're listening. Really got me into U.S. politics. As soon as Donald Trump got elected, I stopped.
I didn't
on the election night. I watched not only all those debates. I watched I made myself watch 1 hour of each major U.S. network coverage on the elections. So I watched CNN, I watched Fox News, and I watched
Fox News.
Why? Yeah, and I watched whatever the other one is. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News.
I just watched CBC.
Yeah. Anyways, so it totally short-circuited my brain for anything to do with U.S. politics. So this whole last 2 years, I've been totally like not even, I haven't even touched it, man. I just can't.
I would just love to go up to that guy one day and just go up to him and be like, explain to me when your country was the greatest country in the world.
Yeah.
When you guys had slavery? Really? That was when you guys were great? Like, yeah. Really? You guys are so proud of
that? How young your country is? Yes, you had World War II. We get it.
Jeez.
It's very important. It's very important.
I guess to kind of recap this whole thing, reading this thing coming in the global news yesterday, I'm very excited. Hopefully something comes from it. I really think what they need to do is really read what Mark Kicken wrote from that report. And I think David Eby should take this seriously. I think the BC government should take this seriously. I think they should convene a panel of people that work in the trade sector. I think they should definitely change and update the laws. I think they should really look at distribution and trying to make that more streamlined. And, you know, whether it's, I think that third-party distribution for certain things, especially spec products, should be definitely something that they should look into. I mean, they already do that with beer. And they already do that with a lot of wine as well. I mean, those companies, I mean, you could even get GFS and Cisco and stuff like this and coming in and get them to do a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're already going to these places.
Anyways.
Yeah, they're already going to these places anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, direct tap could be even used as well. There's a lot of things out there I think they could look into. I hope changes are afoot because putting ourselves at a competitive disadvantage. And, you know, you find ways to make this more streamlined. That's less money you're spending on costs that you can put more into education, health, whatever. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, not like the government has a good track record.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope Fetz gets his whiskey back.
And that's another one.
We're all hoping that happens.
Well, the reason why that happened is because someone who works at one of these stores probably was fucking pissed off and fucking blew the whistle. And then they called someone and then they had to come in and do it because they probably said, hey, so-and-so store, Legacy probably, you shouldn't be selling this stuff to these people. And so the government had to go in and do all that because they knew exactly what they came, went in and got. And they still haven't gotten that booze back, by the way.
No.
So just total bullshit.
Yeah. So,
trying to play around with some new ideas for writing and stuff like this. And I wrote kind of a state of the Vancouver restaurants for the year. Kind of talked about a couple things. First off, David Chang and Guy Fieri in town. Pretty cool.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. I saw both.
They were mainly hanging out in Hastings Village, right?
Yeah. So... Guy Fieri was here.
Red Cat Records.
Pardon me?
Close to Red Cat Records.
Yeah, Guy Fieri was filming. I saw him at Fish House, I think, and then I heard he was at somewhere, Hastings Sunrise and maybe a couple other spots. I saw he took a photo with Mark Brand. But yeah, he's here obviously probably filming Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. You like that show?
I've never seen it, proud to say. Yeah.
I used to love it.
Well, man, people listening to this podcast know how detached I am from like the food and culture, especially celebrity chef scene. Like David Chang, I didn't even know existed until we started doing this podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm learning.
You're such a sidekick sometimes.
Yeah.
So, no, okay. So I used to.
I'm a sidekick. I'm the side host.
I used to love watching his show because I like his energy. Yeah. I liked
Iron Chef before it was Iron Chef America when it was in subtitles.
Oh, yeah. You like that
show was cool, man.
Okay. That's pretty cool. No, but I liked the show. I thought I liked his energy. I liked how he was kind of promoting like small. You know, small time diners and stuff like this, and he seemed like he was pretty cool. But
is that what they do on the show? He just travels the US.
Yeah, he just goes to like diners.
Is it mainly in the USA?
Mainly in the US. He's come up here before. But I posted that a couple of days ago on Facebook saying that I saw David Chang. Is that David Chang was here to film his second season of Ugly Delicious? I think he went to Honey's Donuts up on Granville Island.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, so I think he was down there. Pete
likes Honey's Donuts.
He was with Seth Rogen. I've never had Honey's Donuts. Are they good?
No, I've never been.
I've heard they're really good though. Anyways, he was here for that, but with Guy Fieri, Alex Black, the gentleman who came with us last time on our last episode, or when we talked to the guys from Mind the Bar,
yeah,
he pointed out that I guess Guy Fieri is quite the philanthropist, and he's very giving of his resources and time. So I thought that was kind of cool to learn. So I guess very he does cool. a lot of it kind of under the radar. So I thought that was very commendable.
Shout outs Guy Fieri.
I know.
We should try to get one of them on the show. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it.
We should get one of them while they're here. That would have been pretty cool. I mean, I saw both of them. I was standing right next to both of them. So cool. Probably could have.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want to come on to my small little podcast?
We're a big fan. Well, I think when we were doing episode 3 or 4, we'd mentioned talking about maybe getting Gabe Chang on our podcast. Yeah. And that we were doing the podcast first. We beat him.
We did beat him.
We started the first food and culture podcast.
But yeah, just talk about, I just brought up a couple of trends. I'm really a big fan of Ben Thompson stuff that he does on Stratechery and kind of getting into that, and just kind of talked about a couple of things that are in the industry. I pulled a couple of things from Scout. Autostrada now being Chinar shutting down and Autostrada taking over in that location. Now their second location. And then, with the guys from Campagnolo shutting down Campagnolo Roma with Dashi moving in there.
Where was that place?
Campagnolo Roma?
Yeah.
It's up in Hastings Sunrise. Okay. So it's awesome. I love that restaurant. I love Campagnolo. I love what Robert Belcham does. I think they put out really good food. I still love going there for pizza. And last time I was actually there was before we were going to Arcade Fire when they were playing at Pacific Hall scene.
Oh,
last
cool.
year. I had a really good dinner. But I used to go there all the time because I had friends that lived up in that area. But yeah, it was sad to see that they closed down. But I'm really excited for what the guys at Dashi are doing. And you know, I just kind of took that as kind of maybe a little bit of a snapshot. I mean, this is my own personal opinion, so you don't have to agree with me on this. But, you know, how the casual fine dining sphere is still a difficult market. I was basically just looking at that. And Chinaro is a fantastic restaurant. I ate there a few times and loved the room. Great space. I feel like that area needs a few more things. And yeah, I mean, I just thought it was interesting that the owners kind of reevaluated their business plan. And, you know, decided to maybe do more of an Autostrada model, which is their new restaurant up on Main Street, Main and 34th area. It's in the same building as where Matchstick is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and like...
Ooh, that's like mid-Main. That's like getting close to just residential.
It's close to
Interesting.
You. Close to you.
Closer to me, yeah.
Yeah, and the concept they're doing there is a little bit more casual. And they talk about that in the Scout release, saying that they're looking to have a little bit more of a casual atmosphere. And I'm stoked for it. I mean, I understand that, but it harkens back to the idea that, you know, with Robert Beltran even saying the same thing with Campagnolo Roma, that they were staffing issues and prices going up. And so it just talks about the market, and that you're running a restaurant in the city with, and I think the city just approved a tax hike of, I think it's 4.5% coming in this year. And the minimum wage is going up again on June 1st.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not getting easier to run a restaurant, and anybody out there that's, you know, I commend anyone that's doing it. And, you know, it's a difficult time. And, you know, I talk about the idea that Vancouver diners are maybe looking for a sweet spot when it comes to pricing, and I kind of pulled an idea that maybe $17 to $24 range is kind of a good price for some people. But, right, you know, there's a lot of great restaurants out there that are doing really good stuff that can charge more and get away with it. And, you know, anybody out there that's finding success, you know, I'm really excited for them. So, but talk about that. I feel like that's kind of a thing. And then I also talk about the idea of the delivery age, where I feel like that's going to be a growing theme as we progress into the next decade.
Society's progression to be the laziest fucking, stage of people in human history.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, the delivery age with Foodora and Uber Eats and Skip the Dishes. I mean, if those markets grow,
DoorDash.
I mean, where is that going? That's taking money from restaurants, and, you know, and restaurants can either do two things. They can sit on the sidelines, or they can jump in and start delivering their stuff.
It's ridiculous not to be involved. Yeah, most places, I was going to order some vegan pizza the other day.
From who?
So if you know, there's a place called Vegan Pizza House, and they're all vegan. Yeah, it's never crazy. It's on Kingsway.
I've never heard
of it. It's like Kingsway and mid-Kingsway, I guess. Not quite close to Boundary, but right halfway between there. Can't remember the exact cross street. I think it's in Nanaimo, Kingsway and Nanaimo. Anyway, it's called Vegan Pizza House, and they've been doing it forever. It's like a pizza shop, but they do donairs and Caesar salads, stuff like that. And they use fake meat, and it's also diet cheese, right? Not good for you by any stretch of the imagination. But if you think of like a greasy, like virtuous pie, is essentially how I would describe them. They're like the OGs. It's kind of like the Domino's pizza of vegan pizza. I used to order from them all the time when I lived on Main Street, and they would deliver to me. And when I moved here, I ordered from them so much. When I moved here to Carisdale, the owner, who I know like fairly well, is from eating there all the time. Not all the time, but fairly often, made a special exception for me.
Yeah, because you're out of his neighborhood now.
Out of his neighborhood, because, you know, they'd always come and I'd always like give a big tip, and I ordered, you know, fairly often. Now, I tried to order the other day from them, and they do all of their orders now from DoorDash. And DoorDash says I'm out of the delivery area. Motherfuckers.
Look at that, huh?
And I call them, like, can I just order straight from you? Like, no, we only do DoorDash now. And I'm like, well, I'm out of the area. It's like, well, if the computer says you're out of the area, then you're out there. I'm like, fuck you guys. But anyways, I'll still go there, but I have to drive back.
You know, I actually listened to a really good podcast with the owner or the CEO and the CEO of DoorDash just recently.
Oh, okay.
They were on the Kara Swisher podcast on Recode. And it was fascinating to like listen to how they have the fastest growing delivery model in the United States. It's basically, eventually it's going to become a two market system with them in the US, especially it's going to be them and Uber Eats.
Yeah.
But I love how they call them. They call their drivers the Dashers. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Dashers. Wow. Wonder how long it's going to be until they start delivering weed, too.
That company's only been around since 2013. Yeah. But the way they're talking about their company is really interesting. They're eventually going to be turning it. Because right now they're delivering food. But the way they were talking about it is they eventually want to become the Amazon of delivery.
Yeah.
And they want to start. And Kara Swisher.
Is it Amazon the Amazon of delivery?
I know. Kara Swisher. It was really funny.
That's retarded.
So I'll put a link to this on the podcast if anyone will listen to this. But it was really funny. Kara, I love her because she's so cutthroat, and she'll just go hammer right into the hardest questions. So she asks the CEO right off the bat, she's like, so who are some of your biggest competitors? And he just went roundabout like crazy.
Wow.
So she's like, all right, fuck it. I'm just going to ask COO, can you answer this? And so he eventually comes out and she's like, it's Amazon. Amazon. That's your biggest competitor. You guys eventually. So later on in the episode, they talk about, she's like, you guys eventually want to become like the 21st century best delivery company like this. And the CEO is like, oh, that just sounds like music in my ears.
Holy shit. It's like Futurama.
I know.
Planet Express versus mom's fucking whatever delivery
service.
But
about it. Okay. So think about what you're saying right now, and think about like how, DoorDash has a massive contract with Walmart. So eventually and so these companies are transitioning into our daily lives, and they're going to start delivering a lot more. So that's, unless you're a restaurant and you're going to start being a part of it, or you're going to set up your own virtual restaurants, you can if your food doesn't deliver and you want to do something, this is going to become the way of the future when it comes to the way things are. And that's why you're going to see restaurants running different models. But talk about that. I just talk about like how, like even in Canada right now, Statista says that the forecast for the growth of food delivery in Canada is supposed to grow 13.8% this year. And it's supposed to grow at that rate for the next like 5 years.
Right.
So it's going to become a larger player. Now, if you're a restaurant and you're losing possibly 20% of your market, I mean, over the next 15 or 5 years or so, I mean, that's a big hit. So it's going to change the way things are going on. And I talk about how like a lot of restaurants nowadays are starting to come up with new ways of doing business, whether it's be a part of this model or they're finding ways, like say if you're a cafe during the day, you're going to have like a little bar at night, but you're going to have a different concept. So you're seeing a little bit more of that now. So, but I don't know. It's super interesting. I've yet to ever use one of these.
If they're saying that their main direct competition is Amazon, the funny thing is it all comes back to money eventually, right? Nobody gives a shit about eating local, people do, and in Vancouver, but if these companies and businesses keep making cash over fist, like, it's insane. There's going to be a breaking point at some point where like everyone realizes that it's not sustainable and that you need to just like really focus on just like wherever you live, be more macrobiotic with your thought process when it comes to eating, like eat at local, eat, you know, what's in season and all that kind of shit, right? Which we've talked about before on this podcast with various people, but I'm very anti pop culture, anti establishment. So
okay, so a better question to ask you and to kind of bring all this together. Are you a big fan of like those systems? Are you like you said that you've ordered delivery in the past?
Yeah.
How often would you say you use
a restaurant?
How often would you use that now?
I haven't ordered food delivered in like, I don't know, 6 months.
Okay.
But would you feel comfortable? I've been notoriously known for delivery pizza.
Okay. So I do delivery pizza as well. I do that like once a week.
Right.
I think everyone does that. But for me, it's still, I think, and maybe this is just hitting on my age, but it still kind of seems weird to like call up a restaurant.
Yeah.
Like
it's Chinese or pizza.
Yeah.
Or maybe Greek, maybe.
Yeah.
Or
fried chicken. But I know, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like it'd be weird for me to call up like Autostrada and be like, hey, can I get your pasta delivered to me?
Yeah, I would like pick up.
But my brain just goes like this. It can't be like, I don't want to be disappointed on the quality of this food because I already, like, if I'm ordering something, I generally probably already like it. So, like,
yeah, it's going to be sitting in a bag for,
yeah, like, it just,
45
for me,
minutes.
I mean, I guess
minutes.
I guess it depends. Like, if you're really, like, if it's fast food, like, that kind of makes sense to be a delivery thing. But, like, certain restaurants, they're going to be faced with certain interesting dilemmas. Like how do I get into this market without compromising quality? So,
I think the amount of food complaints on food quality through DoorDash is going to rise. Somebody called, okay, if I was working at a restaurant, I was managing a restaurant, and somebody called me to complain about the quality of their to-go food from DoorDash, I'd be like, click. Yeah. How can you assure quality? There's no way.
Well, the one thing that they're trying to work on with these companies is they're trying to find ways to make restaurants more efficient when it comes to having these orders. Because think about it. Let's say you're running a really busy restaurant and then all of a sudden you partake in this. Now you're working with DoorDash. Well, let's say DoorDash becomes, you have a really popular restaurant. Now let's say you add an extra 20% to 30% onto your already what you're bringing in. Well, how do you handle that volume? You know, let's say you already have a really busy sushi restaurant and you start doing this now and now you start having this delivery. Well, like they're trying to help them with the logistics of that stuff. So
yeah, I think a separate area, either a basement.
Yeah.
Or,
like I think what's going to happen,
separate area in the kitchen.
I think what's happening with this market is like, it's still in its infancy and it's going to be changing a lot. But as I talk about it, I think it's going to be something that's going to be a lot bigger part of our lives as we move forward. And so I think it's interesting. I'm kind of curious to see where it goes.
Yeah.
And I'm curious as to what restaurant I'm going to jump in on first, because I've never done it. So
Are you going to give it a shot? See what it's all about.
I don't know. Which one do you use? Would you use Skip the... I think Skip...
I haven't. As soon as I found out that Vegan Pizza Hut uses DoorDash only, I'm never going to order from there again.
No. But like the three main ones in Vancouver were what? Uber Eats, Skip the Dishes, and DoorDash. And Fedora, right? Fedora is another one.
I have no idea, man.
Yeah. But I don't know which one's the best one. That's the only thing we should look into.
I don't know. Ask Mateo. Mateo, if you're listening, he's big on getting food delivered to his house. But it's Mateo.
Big fan of that?
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine one time, he told me he was so hungover, he ordered like Skip the Dishes or whatever it was, whatever one he chose, like four times in one day.
Yeah, that's as sloth as you can get. Which is one of the seven sins. But, tell him that.
Yeah. But eventually it's one of the seven sins. That's such a good movie. You've seen Seven.
Oh, right? So good. Yeah. What's in the box?
See, that'd be a good movie for you to use on a girl on a first date.
Seven? Okay. I'm thinking more like Groundhog Day or something like that. Something kidding. Romantic.
I'm just kidding. Groundhog Day?
Yeah. Great movie.
Oh, that's...
Can't go wrong with Bill Murray, really.
Yeah. That's I think that's my favorite Bill Murray movie.
Really? Wow. That's a good pick. That's like a deep cut, though.
What was yours?
Well, people would say Caddyshack. I would say Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
I know that's a lot of people love Rushmore. Rushmore, too.
Yeah, but he's kind of like a part of a film. It's not like really his movie.
He's so good. But I think his most underrated role is Scrooged.
Okay. Now you've lost me.
What? He's such a dick in that movie. It's so good. But he's like, you get
it's
full...
good, but I wouldn't put it up there in his like catalog of like.
Do you like best performances? Lost? Do you like him in Lost in Translation?
I love that movie.
Yeah.
We featured on my other podcast that I do, Beats on Repeat. We featured the Virgin Suicides, and which I had never seen it before until prep for that show, which is interesting. The only Sofia Ford Coppola movie I've seen is Lost in Translation.
You never? Oh, you really? You never seen?
I couldn't even name another one.
I feel like Groundhog Day is like the full gamut of Bill Murray.
Right.
Like you get everything there.
Yeah. It's like, comedy at its finest. Yeah. It's a romance story, love story as well. Yeah.
Did you like Annie McDowell?
Endearing. Never saw it.
No, Annie McDowell, the girl that he likes.
Oh, they're talking about some weird random Bill Murray film. Yeah. I do love Annie McDowell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forget it.
Yeah. 80s stuff.
Yeah.
If we've lost you, it's fine.
And then the other thing I talk about is just like we still have the issue of chef shortage in this.
Yeah, I mean, well, we've talked almost to nauseam about that point.
But I mean, that's
but it's probably out of the three the most important. If that situation doesn't get fixed, it's going to
adversely
affect the industry.
I mean, there's I've heard some good stuff from people in the city that their benefits are starting to become a more thing. Pay is coming up. I think the market is really changing things for that. So I think the life of a chef right now is probably a lot better than what it probably was even 5 years ago. But I mean, a lot of that comes down to the fact that just a lot of people aren't in it. So they probably have to pay them more because there's less choice for restaurant owners. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't think it's ever going to be a position that's going to be paid, glorious amounts of money. But hopefully things turn in their favor. But I don't know how you remedy that problem. I've tried to wrap my brain around that one for a long time, but yeah.
I'm finding it hard to wrap my brain around anything.
Yeah, you're foggy right today. I feel like 2019 is going to be the year of the veggie burger.
Hell, man. Damn. It's been the year of the veggie burger like every year of my life for the last 4 years.
I've had six people
tell me this year.
I've had six people tell me in the last like 2 days that the Beyond Meat burger from A&W is like the greatest thing
I've
ever had.
All right. I don't even want to get into that anymore. If you are into fake meat, and you want to maybe switch over, or if you want to eat less meat, go to the fucking store and buy one of those. You can get them packaged from Costco because you're probably, maybe you have a Costco membership. Get a bun,
get
some vegetables from the store and make your goddamn fucking burger at home.
Are you ranting?
Don't support A&W, huh?
You're ranting while you're
angry. No, I'm not ranting. I just get so...
You're angry.
I'm so angry that people are still supporting fast food companies when they're killing the fucking environment, the world we live in.
But that does say something about where the world is turning, because I think the Canadian government just came up with, I think they're coming up with a new food guide soon. But I think there was some report I just read recently how food prices and food costs and everything are going up, but like beef and pork and stuff is actually going down.
Oh, like, great. Yeah, like, meat's getting cheaper. Fantastic.
No, but I think it's because people are eating less meat. Like, yeah. Think about it. If the fast food industry is noticing this trend,
right,
then it's something.
And that's the other thing. But that's the other thing is they're just noticing a trend and they're trying to capitalize on it.
So wait, absolutely.
People, be smart. Go buy your own burgers. Make your own. You like fake meat? You want to eat less? Do it yourself.
But here's the thing. I tried doing this. I bought a vegetarian book for my girlfriend for Christmas.
Oh.
And we've been trying to use some of the recipes. And there, in that book, there is how to make your own veggie burger.
Right.
I tried doing this.
So, okay.
I'm not doing that ever
again.
Don't
try to make it. You'll never get the recipe right. And it won't be the same. If you want that fake meat experience, there's a company called Field Roast, and they make a fantastic veggie burger that has, get this, no binders, no fucking sugar. It's just expeller pressed safflower oil and gluten. Gluten is the binder. It's 100% natural. It's filled with spices and vegetables and everything else. A really short ingredients list. You can get it from Whole Foods or Choices or wherever, it's called Field Roast. That tastes 100 times better than the fucking Impossible Burger at A&W. So go check that out.
What's it called? Field Roast?
Field Roast. They're a company in Seattle.
Interesting.
Yes. And if you want a better taste experience than that, you know, that burger at A&W that's not loaded with chemicals that you can't pronounce and sugar and God knows what, probably like fucking baby tears or something like that, then check that out. You might like it. There's some baby tears?
Yeah, you said just baby tears. Weird.
I should have said baby bones or something. Okay. Or babies.
On that note, we both went to Como.
We did.
Sean Layton, Frankie Harrington, you guys have done a great job. I had a really lovely time.
I just want to say that I don't go out very often. I maybe go to Mammy's sometimes. I go out with you to wherever you're going. Tristan and I go to the Oakwood sometimes to support Tristan. I had a great time there.
It's such a nice room.
It's really cool. The concept's cool. The only thing their bamboo cocktail is fucking unbelievable.
Nice.
Perfect. And they made me vegan stuff, man. Like, it was one of the best chickpea dishes I've ever had. I think it was like a white wine onion shallot thing.
Perfect.
There was some stuff I could eat. So if you're vegan, don't be afraid to go there. It's great.
But I mean, the one thing I think that they have going for them, and if I was a restaurateur, I think it would be really cool, is the fact that they have, you have Brass Neck right there. You have Main Street Brewing.
Oh, yeah.
There. You have 33 Acres like just down the street. You have Bicycles. What is it? Bicycle City? Is that what it's called?
Electric Bicycle Brewery.
Electric Bicycle.
Yeah.
You have all these breweries right there. Like, and then you have...
Well, that's what Sean was saying when he was on our podcast. And if you haven't listened to that episode, we had Sean Layton on 2 months before he opened Como. And he goes through details, the entire thought process behind the experience, how it's been for him, how excited he was. So check that episode out. But that's what he was saying, is that it's such a community-based neighborhood.
Yeah.
And everyone there has been super supportive.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
You're just building those relationships of all those fantastic places. And you know, I've stated for a long time that Brass Neck is my favorite brewery in Vancouver by a long shot. Not my favorite tasting room, but my favorite brewery.
Oh, it's my favorite tasting room.
Yeah. So yeah, just being able to do, you know, I'm sure they're going to do coordinated events with all these guys, kind of stuff like Strange Fellows does in their neighborhood. So yeah, really cool, really happy for those guys.
You know, the guys from Brass Neck are opening up a new bar downtown, right?
I didn't know that.
It's called Magnet. Oh. It's going to be opening up close to where Chinar is, right downtown.
Brass Magnet. I like it.
Yeah. So Brass Neck. Yeah. It's. I think it's going to be kind of similar to the idea of what they do at Alibi Room. So, cool. Because he owns Alibi Room, right?
Yeah.
So Nigel does. So I'm very excited for that. Oh, and we have to go. Okay. So on our next one, we have to go check out Dashi and Ver. Okay. Those are two new restaurants that opened in the city. And I know guys who are involved.
I might let you go on that one solo, but.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to go check those out. I've been getting some angry text messages because I haven't been able to make it to Dash yet, but I'm excited to go there soon.
Fair enough. Yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm excited about...
Well, and we do have some exciting new stuff coming up.
Yes.
But we'll keep that a secret
now. We have a lot of stuff coming up soon. We're going to be...
Right.
There's going to be a lot of changes afoot. We're very excited for 2019. As things progress, we will start to let you guys know about some of these big changes that we have on the go.
Yeah. And we shout anyone out?
No. You just shouted Mateo. So.
Okay. Mateo. Shout outs Grancini. Come on the podcast.
Yeah, he's coming on.
So. Shout outs. Let's shout out everybody.
No,
Ron.
No,
Ron Oliver.
I'm good.
No?
So I think people are done.
Okay. Let's just. Okay.
Well, thank you for listening. As always, you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Please rate us. Please pass this along to all your friends. And have a great day.